It's time for another episode of The Scoop. Get ready to talk Temple Athletics with John DiCarlo, Kyle Gauss, Matt Vender, and Dalton Bolfazer.
All right, everyone. Welcome to Season 3, Episode 5 of The Scoop. I'm here joined by John DiCarlo and Kyle Gauss. I'm Matt Vender. How's everybody doing today?
First intro from Matt.
It went well.
Yeah. It went really well.
Who we are, what we're here to do.
We're without Dalton Bolfazer. We
miss him every day.
Yeah, yes. He's busy with his internship at Comcast Sportsnet, didn't have time for the little people.
He'll be producing, so Matt stepped up to the plate, just walked out of the dugout, put a little batting donut on, took a couple of practice swings, there we go.
Yep, it's a next man up sort of thing, you know?
Kyle looked like rotating his rotator.
No, I'm telling you, I was trying to test you for him. Like, every time I get the flu shot, I go, oh, it's not actually going to be sore, and every year it's sore for me. Every year, though, I go, what arm do you want to put it in? It's sore. And I go, that's for babies. Like, it's not sore. Put it in my right arm. And every year, shit.
You'll be all right?
No. I'll play through it.
You can finish the rest of my salad over there. It's got shrimp in it. Actually, no, don't. I want the rest of that.
There's, like, the juice at the bottom.
That's dressing.
Yeah.
A little ginger dressing, Kalamata olives.
I couldn't care less about your salad.
Well, there was a Temple football game this weekend.
Yeesh.
There was not.
There wasn't. It was Thursday.
Ah, okay. I consider Thursday to be the weekend.
What, the post-mortem of the mess that was that loss at USF, and then talk about what Temple has coming up in its home conference opener coming up against Houston. But let's go through the carnage of last Thursday first. The only thing that really went well, points-wise, was Jacob Martin's.
Field looked like it was in good condition.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not many people there.
Not many people
in that stadium.
For the proof that USF, no matter how well they do, just does not draw. But, I mean, obviously, we're 6 days removed from it. The team wants to move on from it. But, you know, obviously, some of the hot-button issues are six interceptions, just the abysmal play at quarterback, the lack of identity on offense again. You know, I don't think anybody, you know, expected Temple to win this game, but for them to lose 43-7, again, it was just one of the more dreadful performances since, what, the 2006 loss at Penn State, right? Yes.
Which is the second time this year they've set that worst loss.
Yeah, I actually covered that game. That was Golden's first year. They crossed midfield, I think, once in that game. They were terrible. They were absolutely terrible, except this team has more talent than that team had. So it's a loaded question, but,
there's a lot of NFL guys on that 2016.
What's that?
There's a lot of NFL freshmen.
But at the time, the average weight, I think, of that offensive line was somewhere around like 260, 275.
Brutal.
They could not block anybody. But loaded question, obvious question, but let's get into it. What went wrong last Thursday?
Well,
beyond everything.
The quarterback play, obviously, was below the line. I mean, didn't see that coming. Logan Marchi, after Dave Patton had told me last week he's playing like an all-league player, goes out and throws three picks and just looked completely lost. I thought USF was doing some interesting things defensively. They were stacking the box and forcing Temple to throw it, as other teams have done this season. Mm-hmm. But Temple, obviously, for the fourth time this season, I mean, since that Notre Dame game in the first half where they ran 11 times for 60 yards, they have really not been able to establish mm-hmm. anything as far as a run game goes, and that continued against USF. Raquel Armstead couldn't get anything going. They run for what, -4 rushing yards as a team. Backup fullback Rob Ricciavato is their leading rusher with
Nitro.
Yeah, with what, 25 rushing yards. So, I mean,
I think
the,
it was like
the rushing
five or something, but I mean.
The rushing performance was just absolutely dreadful. The offensive line play was not good. I mean, the offensive line just seems to not be developing really any push, and that's not good for a group that has four redshirt seniors and a talented center in Matt Hennessy. So
that's a big thing for me because, again, so the hot button issues for fans have been everybody's upset with Dave Patnode right now. They're upset with the play calling. I'm not saying that anybody should be particularly excited about it. They're upset with the play calling. They're upset with the fact that, you know, you squeak by Villanova, you squeak by UMass. So the two issues were, like, not creating enough push up front on offense and then kind of just giving up a lot over the middle of the field. Now, this is prior to last Thursday, and then everything went wrong. Yeah, the play calling could probably be better. Yes, they need an identity on offense. But they're not running, at least on Thursday, they weren't running out of the shotgun all the time. Sometimes they were running out of the eye, and they still weren't getting anything. And that's, and I knew that the answer that Jeff would give was like, yeah, we're not getting enough of a push. We need to move people. That's been a focus in practice. But yeah, I think what a lot of people are upset about is, okay, obviously you lost PJ. You lost Dion. He's a loss. You lose Jihad. He's a loss. But, you know, I don't know. Everybody's saying, like, you know, Matt Hennessy was supposed to be an upgraded center, and maybe he will eventually be, but he is a redshirt freshman. But your guards are essentially the same. Leon's played a lot of football. They should not be getting moved off the ball as much as they are. Because, again, I mean, I saw plenty of runs where they ran out of the eye, and they still, with Nick Sharga as the blocking fullback, they still weren't getting anything. And so I think it goes beyond, you know, maybe it is partly scheme, but I think it goes beyond some of the play calling. Because, I mean, they were out of it so quickly last Thursday where they didn't have enough time to even, literally sometimes enough time to do anything. It was like, right, boom, somebody was in Logan's face, you know, somebody was in Frank's face. But I don't recall seeing a whole lot of like, oh, it's third down, let's try to get cute with an option toss or something like that. They completely ceded control of the line of scrimmage. And that, to me, to anybody with half a brain, would be a huge concern, because it's not a completely new offensive line. So I think, to me, it goes beyond the play calling, which we can get into. I'm sure we have some sort of mailbag question about it, and we'll talk about the play calling because it's come under scrutiny. But even beyond, even when they get into some sort of base package, they're not moving anybody.
Concern for me, and I guess this could be remedied by the competition this week, is, if you rewind for the last 4 years, when P.J. Walker made a bad throw, made a bad decision, made an interception, the next drive, P.J. Walker was still P.J. Walker. Yeah. P.J. Walker forgot about the previous play. There were times when he had bad games, but he was still trusting his arms doing all this. Logan Marchi made a lot of mistakes in the first half, and I saw a quarterback absolutely crumble. Yeah. I didn't see him bounce back and say, okay, I made that mistake, that's in the past, we're still in this game. They were still in that game. Jacob Martin gets that touchdown, the fumble return for a touchdown, and all of a sudden they get a three and out to start the second half. You're down 13 with the ball.
Yeah.
I saw a quarterback Frank Dutile comes out after that. But then Logan Marchi never looked good. He never looked confident. He looked shell-shocked. And then at a certain point, it seemed like, and this, a lot of this is on the coaches, it seemed like once they got down by a certain amount, the rest of the skill players on the team kind of quit.
Yeah.
I saw lazy routes by wide receivers. I saw dropped balls that should have been caught. It kind of snowballs and avalanches into a game that, okay, was Temple absolutely outclassed? Yes. Was Temple outclassed to the point where it only got 80-some yards and 60% of those are in mop-up time? No. Like, they could have fought back. They didn't fight back. It's up to the coaches coming into this week to get that team focused again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it was really just a team. I mean, offensively at least, it was bad on all fronts. I mean, the receivers were uncharacteristically dropping balls. I mean,
yeah. Isaiah Wright dropped if he caught it and then looked downfield, there was nobody near him for 30 yards. Mm-hmm. Maybe that sparked something. Instead, it just drops off his hand and comes number three and out.
Yeah, the drops to me are disturbing, because when you have a quarterback, when you have the two quarterbacks playing as poorly as they did, to have a drop is just demoralizing, because, you know, Newtile put a ball in there for Isaiah Wright. He drops it, and that could have been, you know, a big gainer, and instead they're looking at, you know, a second or third and long. So to me, the drops were disturbing. I don't think that'll continue. I don't think that's a trend that's going to continue, because I think these receivers are just too good. But the run game issues are something that they just haven't been able to figure anything out since that first half against Notre Dame. I don't know how you solve it, but like John said, I mean, they were going in the I formation, they were going under center with Raquel, they were doing some of the same things they did last year, and it just wasn't resulting in enough push from the offensive line. So I don't know where you go from here. I don't think the complaint could be any more that they haven't tried to go out of the I formation, because I think we've seen it and it hasn't worked. So I don't know where they go from here, but if you look at the run game, I just think maybe it's just a problem where they're trying to do too many different things. You know, we've seen them try and get Raquel to the outside a lot with shotgun runs. That hasn't worked. So I think the biggest thing with Pat Newt is just, John touched on it, developing an offensive identity. They need to just, I think, close things in and go to one thing that they can just be good at. They don't need to do three or four different things where they're going to a spread, where they're going to power run formation. They just need to have an identity, have one good thing that they can go to when things are not good, and just go to it and hope that it works. And they don't have that right now.
Yeah, it looks like they're trying to be last year's team and this year's team altogether, and it's not working. And Kyle brings up a great, great point about Logan. And we would always kind of say here and there, like, people would pick apart P.J. Walker's performance, and rightfully so. He wasn't perfect, but, I mean, he did win a lot of games, led you to a conference championship. And we would say, yeah, at some point, people are going to really appreciate him. And that's one of the things that you appreciate about him. He had plenty of throws scrutinized, plenty of moments scrutinized. People would scrutinize him on social media after the conference after the bowl game. But he would more often than not bounce back. I mean, what I don't get, and maybe the simple answer is playing in his fourth game, but Logan Marchie goes out into an atmosphere when he really did not know he was going to start until a week before. Goes out into one of the most, and we've said it's not the loudest place in the world, but goes into one of the most fabled places in college football, and actually went out and played like he knew what he was doing for the most part. Not every throw was perfect, but he went out and threw for more than 250 yards, right? Couple touchdowns, and he wasn't the reason why they lost to Notre Dame. The defense, I mean, they just got gashed on offense. Brandon Wimbush, Josh Adams, pick your poison, they just got gashed on defense. And like Kyle said, a lot of everything went wrong, but he just really crumbled. He mean, just really, really came unraveled. And then I just never seen that in all of the years I've been on the beat. I don't think I've ever seen a game like that where it was this guy's in, back and forth. And but yes, is it a conference game? Yes, but you're playing in front of less than 10,000 people. And yes, they were sending a lot of pressure. Yes, it was probably like blood in the water for a bunch of great whites, but like he just did not, in a quieter space and environment, he just really came unraveled. So I think it's a little bit of everything. But I think the funny thing is after four games, you say, well, we probably figured they'd be 2-2.
Right.
It's just how they've gotten there is the strange thing. The quarterback play at first was actually better than we thought it was going to be. The run game has been awful, non-existent. And I know missing Jihad is big because he gives you the east-west part of things, and you don't really have that right now. Until further notice, every once in a while you see a little bit of a burst out of David Hood, but let's face it, there's a huge drop-off after Armstead. Whether it's Gardner, and I know Gardner had his moments against SMU, but there's a drop-off there. But like you said, Matt, they need to pick some sort of identity and pick it quickly, because I know this is Jeff Collins' first year, but they're not exactly rebuilding. They should be retooling. This is a team and a roster that has enough talent to win 6 or 7 games, and they could still very well get there, but it's been a while since I've seen anything like what we saw Thursday night.
One thing, guys, this is, I guess, scraping for positives. Defense, obviously, despite giving up 43 points, didn't play that bad. The linebackers were aggressive.
Yeah, like Matt said, they made 6 times they were put in an awful field position. Yeah.
Yep. So USF scoring drives. The first one, 5 plays, -1 yard, and they got a field goal. So you got -1 yards of offense there. 3 yards, 54. 2 plays, 25 for a touchdown. They had a 20-yard drive, a 14-yard drive, a 6-yard drive. They were shutting them down last year. You turn the ball over 6 times or whatever it is, it doesn't matter who you have out there.
Yeah, and let's play this clip. Matt, we were talking about this before we got started. This is Delvon Randall talking about how the offense came to the defense and apologized, right?
Yeah.
And just for the position they put him in, and Delvon essentially said, hey, we're a team. So here's Delvon Randall just talking about that and talking about that team interaction and just kind of the aftermath of the USF game.
Being back for the past couple days, being back and getting back to practice on Sunday, just how do you feel the team has responded to, you know, the loss at South Florida and moving past it?
So here's the deal. We had practice on Sunday, study. We had to study on Monday, practice today. Them two practices that we had, we responded very well. You know, we came, we was ready, we were flying around. You know, we were being physical today because today was the padded practice. So we responded well so far.
Was that Sunday practice, was that maybe moved because of the way you guys played on Thursday, or was that scheduled before?
It was scheduled. That's how we do it. Well, that's how we're going to do it when we have Saturday game. You know, it was short weeks before, mm-hmm. so we couldn't get to it.
Mm-hmm. How tough were the short weeks on you, two short weeks in a row?
It was tough, you know. It was tough, and we had to overcome it, but, you know, we didn't execute that well, so we're back to Saturday game, so this will be, you know, this will be interesting to see what's going to happen.
After looking back at the film and kind of evaluating things, where would you say, obviously, you know, you give up 43 points, 300 plus yards rushing. Where would you say things kind of went wrong for you guys on defense?
Missed execution. You know, we held them to a couple field goals, which was good. We had, you know, turnover on downs. You know, we scored on defense. So we played pretty good, but we didn't do what we needed to do, you know, in order to keep them under 21 points or whatever we wanted to keep them under.
Mm-hmm. How much of an emphasis this week will be to, you know, get the better field position? I know you guys were put in some bad positions last week. How much of an emphasis is it to kind of flip the field position this week?
All right, so, you know, we came in, talked to our offense. You know, our offense apologized, but, you know, we didn't want them to apologize to us. You know, we're a team. You know, we're all one. So if they play bad, we play bad. You know what I'm saying? It all equals up. You know what I'm saying? So it wasn't just the offense. You know, it wasn't just the defense, special teams. You know, we're all one. So we came, we talked. You know, we just got to get everything better.
Has there been anybody in particular that's kind of stood up? I know you're single-digit guys. Has there been anybody in particular that's kind of stood up to the team and said anything to kind of move past that game?
Yeah. The seniors, you know, single digits, like you said, we all get up, we talk. You know, we just got to get back to what we know, what's best, like what's next, want to know every week. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so again, you know, the guys this week were saying a lot of the predictable stuff. We got to forget about this game, put it in the rearview mirror. I thought Jeff Collins, the other thing that kind of struck me about, I don't know, listeners and readers, fans probably won't give a damn about this. I thought, not that he's been confrontational or anything, but we've kind of joked in the first few weeks that Jeff has always had these long opening statements in his Tuesday press conferences. I thought he was, like, pretty contrite this week, pretty self-aware. You know, he was actually, like, thanking the media for, like, asking good questions, and he said, "I'll actually ruminate about these questions, and I'll think about them," and then it led to an answer that people kind of, I think at least a few fans on message boards have kind of joked about, because they'll say, "I love these players," and he said, "The one question I thought about it was what about like who's
going about the quarterback? Is Logan Marchie still
is
your
Logan
quarterback?
Marchie your quarterback?" And this was kind of cheesy. He's like, "You know what? They're all our quarterbacks." You know, Logan, Frank, Toddy, and Russo. And I saw and heard a guy that I think he gets it. I think he knows where things are right now. Mm-hmm. And I think the truth is somewhere in the middle. Like, one thing we should touch on really quickly before we turn our attention to Houston is, I mean, everybody and their mother wanted to know, why isn't Anthony Russo getting in? Why isn't Anthony Russo getting in? I think, you know, Jeff told reporters after the game Thursday, and some people just, again, after a loss, nobody likes any answer. They don't like any question. They don't like any tweet. They don't like anything, which I get. I don't have a single issue with what he said. He was, you know, we weren't going to put him in because nobody in America, I'm sure, reps their four-string quarterback to prepare for a
right.
game. So the only way Anthony Russo was going to get in was going to be like severe mop-up duty, and he just didn't get in. I think it was either Zach Gelb or somebody asked Jeff on Tuesday. He asked him yesterday about, you know, what's going on with Russo, and I thought, again, at this point, I think Jeff's answer is very fair. We're going to see how they respond in practice. I don't know where else you can go after Thursday. You hit the reset button and see how the guys respond in practice, because they're probably all shell-shocked. Russo might even be shell-shocked and thinking, like, damn, I thought maybe I was going to get in there for some mop-up duty. I don't have any issue with that, but people want to know about Anthony Russo. He hasn't shown enough in practice to warrant playing time. I get that he was an Elite 11 quarterback. I get that he had some decent offers. He was committed to Rutgers. Just hasn't been good enough to play so far.
There is a terrible theory going around the internet that the reason Logan Marchie started over Anthony Russo is because Dave Patineau recruited Logan Marchie when he was at Coastal Carolina, so he knew what type of guy he was, and he doesn't know what to do with somebody like Anthony Russo that had big offers. Dumbest thing I've ever heard. There's no way Anthony Russo is...
Can you give me a clue as to who's perpetuating this rumor?
The usual suspects.
Okay. Just curious.
If you honestly thought Anthony Russo was dominating practice and hitting these 60-yard frozen ropes to wide receivers and that they were going with three guys that put up five interceptions and 89 passing yards, mm-hmm. then I have, like, beachfront property in Florida to sell you. It makes no sense. The kid... I have nothing against Kate. He's never been nothing but nice to me. Mm-hmm. The fact of the matter is, right now, as a redshirt freshman, he has not shown enough in practice to warrant even getting up in these mop-up dudes.
Yeah, and we've seen. I mean, we've been at practices. We've been at the spring game. Does he have a strong arm for the most part. Does he have a dynamic next level arm? I don't think he does. Can he make throws? Yeah. Logan has a stronger arm than I thought he had. Sometimes the way he delivers is a little odd. I don't think Anthony Russo's arm is any stronger than Logan's. I really don't.
Counterpoint to that would be, well, Frank Neuteil's arm looked terrible on Thursday, and he's your backup quarterback and in the running to start this week. Some of his throws were slow motion.
Right. Again, people don't like this answer. It sounds trite. Sometimes things just don't work out. Things haven't worked out for Aaron Ruff. And until further notice, until he starts getting into games and playing, things haven't really worked out for Kareem Ali so far.
If you're Anthony Russo and you were this relatively this kid wasn't turning down Alabama. Like the LSU never offered. They were just interested.
He wanted him to come down and visit.
And they would have over-recruited him the next year. He was a very good Southeastern Pennsylvania quarterback that had decent offers that you flipped from a Big Ten team, but quite frankly, in a situation where at that time, Temple could have taken anybody they wanted from Rutgers. Rutgers was at the lowest they'd ever been, and Temple took Isaiah Wright at the same time. They took whoever they wanted. If you were him, this was the week that your opportunity is. The other three quarterbacks just played awful last week. If you think you have a future here, then if he went out this week and dominated in practice, maybe for lack of a phrase, it's a reset button. All four quarterbacks, or the two might be at a little bit of advantage than the other, but if Todd Senteo also came out and looked like Joe Montana this week in practice, it might be hard-pressed to keep him off the field. So I'm going to get Russo.
Yeah, these coaches had... Yeah, these guys have to win games. This is not... And again, I know that the athletic department does not want... sounds silly to say, but in Matt's first year... I think they knew they were hitting the reset button a little bit. Okay, you go 2-10. 2 wins isn't going to get it done this year. They would not be happy with that. I don't even think the tenor of the conversation would be like, well, we're rebuilding. They'd be ticked. These guys know they have to win football games. They're not loyal to any of these guys. They didn't recruit any of these guys. Now, technically, Dave, apparently he saw Logan play. He did recruit Toddy when he was at Coastal, but none of them are quote-unquote their guys. So... they're not dumb enough to have some sort of preconceived notion. People are saying, well, Russo's not a fit because he's not mobile. Frank Neuteil, not mobile. They got to get someone there in there who can move the offense. And like Kyle said, this would be one of those weeks. And so now when it's back to being like an open thing, this would be that week, right? And if Logan struggles or Frank struggles and you don't see Russo get in the game, that gives you yet another firm reminder of where he is. Maybe he stays and maybe next year he becomes a quarterback of the century. It'd be a great story. Like I said, if fans are listening to this, we don't give a damn who's playing. Right. And I understand he's a hot button issue. Why isn't he playing? He's not playing because he hasn't been good enough yet.
Yeah, I'm not one to always rule out a redshirt freshman who's in his second year of college football and still has a lot of time left. I mean, he'll have 3 years of eligibility after this season. So I wouldn't rule him out as a guy who could still contribute or maybe even start some games down the line. But with that being said, I think fans have to realize, and you guys have both touched on it, but fans have to realize that if he was really lighting it up and if the coaches really saw that he was that great, he would have been on the field by now. He would have played at USF or he would have played before then. And I think... you just have to trust that the coaches are evaluating these guys every day in practice. They see what's going on in practice. They see a lot more than we do. They see it a whole lot more than the fans do. And you just have to trust that the coaches are evaluating these guys. The coaches know what they're doing. And they can evaluate a quarterback and say, hey, can he help us win football games right now? And the answer is probably no, if you ask about Anthony Russo.
If Anthony Russo was a defensive tackle or a cornerback, we wouldn't be having this conversation. Because he's a quarterback... It's obvious for these, easier for the common fan to realize when a quarterback's struggling. He's a redshirt freshman, like you said. If he sticks it out, maybe he switches in that guy. Michael Dogby didn't play until he was like a redshirt sophomore. Artrell Foster didn't play until he was a sophomore. All these things. Chappelle Russell, who's wearing number one this year, didn't play until he was a redshirt sophomore. But because he's a quarterback, it's easy for that, and it's harder for you to work in these guys and get their feet wet because there's only a finite number of snaps. It's not like defensive linemen where there's four guys playing 80 snaps a game, you can work them in.
One other thing I wanted to touch on briefly before we go on to Houston, you mentioned it earlier, the body language. Again, no one's expecting him to be smiling and high-fiving when you're down 43-7, but Ventel not finishing out routes. I actually wanted to follow up and ask Jeff about that and didn't get a chance to. The two personal foul penalties, one of them coming from was Saquon Jefferson, right? Was it him? There's one on Sam Franklin. Someone else picked up one, too?
Maybe. Ja'Keese Thomas?
Ja'Keese Thomas, I think. And just, you know, just one of those, like, what's that?
Ja'Keese Thomas is scared of frogs.
That's right, I remember that, yeah. That's in his bio, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And any time, right, wrong, or indifferent, when there is a new staff coming in, could be basketball, could be football, could be freaking badminton, do you have control of the program? Do you have control of these guys? And a lot of people were wondering about that. What the body language, guys not running out, finishing off routes, the late game penalties. I will say this. I thought this was a very good anecdote because a couple of us asked about Sam Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff told the story about how – so Sam Franklin apparently wrote a letter to apologize to the official – and he said something about, like, what, he said he was tying his shoe or something like that?
Yeah, apparently he was trying to tie his shoe, didn't just lay down and ask the refs for a timeout. So instead he flipped out on one of the refs and got him on his
personal. Yeah, and you saw that. He, like, he gestured to the ref, like, threw his hands in the air. So apparently he wrote a letter. Jeff was impressed by that, and he said, in all of my years of coaching, I've never seen anything like that. I still think Sam Franklin has a chance to be a pretty good player. He is, and I asked Jeff, I said, other than the quarterback, I think on defense, he's in one of the most vulnerable positions, that strong side spot. He's constantly left out there. I mean, he's really getting, and I'm sure we'll talk more about the young linebackers. He's really, of all the guys, like really in like a trial by fire type of spot. There's a wheel route, boom, he's covering it. Sometimes he gets matched up on a receiver. People are like, is he playing corner? Is he playing corner? I know he was a former defensive back. I'll be interested to see if he, as cheesy as it sounds, kind of grows from that moment because, his body language wasn't good. I'll be interested to see if that improves because as a new staff, obviously you're judged on wins and losses, but the optics of that, you don't want that stuff either.
I haven't handwritten a letter since Santa. Like, I haven't been like, Dear John, how are you? Dear John letter. But no, I can't imagine last time I handwritten a letter.
I get like a, what about a card?
That doesn't count. The love card. Literally, Meg will write the card, she'll write the thing, and I'll just write love, blank, and Meg. And I just go, Kyle.
Did you always get what you wanted?
So the way the Gauss house worked was you would do Christmas Eve and you would do like most of your gifts and then there'd be one gift from Santa on Christmas Day and that was usually the bigger gift. And most of the time, I had a pretty blessed childhood.
I got everything I wanted. Where's the food?
And then I'd just fall asleep. It was always so early, I would just go back to bed.
Yeah, all right.
Play with this in the morning.
So let's move on to the Houston Cougars, who are coming to Lincoln Financial Field for a noon tilt on Saturday.
Cougars are in town.
Cougar
Town.
Not the type.
Cougar Town, wasn't that
Courtney Cox,
Courtney
right?
Courtney Cox, yeah. Cougar Town.
Not the type of Cougars.
The same guy that wrote Scrubs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, same showrunner.
Not the type of Cougars Matt's hoping for. But.
You know how you can tell a woman's age at a bar?
No, but I'm anxious
hands.
To...
Look at the hands.
Yeah?
I'll tell you. If they look young, look at the hands. Well, women, like when they get in their 40s, women's hands become more drier.
That's interesting.
Look at that. It's always taking
it the next time I'm out at a bar.
An old man taught me that up in Lake Harmony, Pennsylvania.
Really?
This woman was flirting with the guy I was there with, and they were like, God, she's like 29, 30. He's like, no, man, look at her hands. She's that woman's like 45, 50.
That's like some sort
my
of...
Buddy, I wouldn't even call him my buddy. It was a guy we were sharing a house with. Still went home with her, so it was fine.
Age is just a number.
That's true.
So I keep telling myself. So I mean, they're an interesting matchup. I would argue, and they haven't even played every year, but there's a little bit of, I wouldn't necessarily call this like a rivalry game, but there's been a little bit of like juice in this matchup. Like they came in and handled Matt in his first year. There's the conference championship game.
They handled them. Temple lost that game, but
that's the first American conference.
Yeah, first American game.
Mike Oresco will now take interviews in the press conference.
Crickets.
In the press conference.
Call you a fourth cheesesteak. They're an interesting program that, again, another first-year coach, Major Applewhite, who Jeff Collins has worked with. They play two quarterbacks. They have maybe one of the top, not even maybe, one of the top defensive tackles in the entire country. And Ed Oliver, here's a guy who's been – every bit as good as his ranking. Was he a five-star kid?
Yep.
Yes,
a five-star kid. That was
one to stay home.
Yeah, a big get for Tom Herman at the time. Jeff, I asked Jeff about about Oliver yesterday, and he said, when I was in the SEC, I said, look, I'm sure coaches hate this question, but would you compare him to anybody? You've been around a lot of good defensive tackles at Mississippi State and Florida. And he mentioned some names. He mentioned Fletcher Cox and some of those guys. But he said in the SEC, the one common denominator was that defensive tackles would wreck the game. If they were wrecking the game, you didn't stand a chance. It disrupted everything else. To me, and get to this a little bit later when we make predictions, the game, that's a huge, huge part of the game. I'm going to be really focused on that. But again, they bring a lot of different variables between him playing a couple quarterbacks. What are you guys thinking when you take a look at this game?
I mean, yeah, I don't know if I'd call it a rivalry, because I don't think you can be a rival with somebody that you only play every like 3 years.
Not so much a rivalry, but like there's been like a little bit in the young history of the conference. There's been a little bit of history there between
the 2013 game where Temple's leading at halftime 13-9, and then Houston won 13 points in a row.
Yeah,
that was the first game where people were like, maybe like that was like a letdown game for Connor Riley. Didn't play well, and that's when like two games later, PJ Walker has that job. Then obviously they go down to Houston in 2015 for the championship game.
But no. Also, before that, they went down there. There was a 2014,
right?
Yeah. Remember, what stands out, wasn't that the game where Avery went down there? Avery Williams' helmet popped off.
Was
they
it?
Played them. Yeah, they played them three times previously. There was the game at the Link. They played Houston on the road.
Yeah, that was 2014.
It was a Friday night game, I believe.
Yeah.
Right. Then there was the conference championship game, and then this game.
And this game, they didn't play last year. So 2014, they played.
Yeah,
they played at Houston on Friday night. That was still when Greg Ward was a receiver.
It was Greg Ward's first game as quarterback.
Yes.
I do remember this.
Yeah, remember there was a collision between Avery and Greg Ward, and somebody's helmet came off.
I think it was Greg Ward's. I don't think it was Avery's.
Okay.
Greg Ward threw for 268 yards, 2 touchdowns, and only rushed for 44 yards. Yeah, I remember. Okay.
Keith Kirkwood came in that game, and that game was in October. He hadn't played the whole year. He transferred from Hawaii, and then they put him in there, and he caught a touchdown that game, too.
No. That game was at home. That game was at home.
Keith,
I vividly remember because he's wearing number.
He was wearing number 19.
That's not what I'm saying. The first game he played was at home because I remember asking, who is this guy lining up? Is that Shahid Lovett? Because Shahid Lovett wore 19. And one of the Temple's SID members said, yeah, that's Shahid Lovett. And afterwards, it was Keith Kirkwood. Because he was ineligible. He was ineligible the entire time, and then the NCAA gave him a waiver, and he caught a touchdown.
The point you were making was right. Point he was.
Keith Kirkwood did not play. Keith Kirkwood. He did have a touchdown that game though.
Okay. Well, as always, I'm right.
It's a gray area.
We're all over the map right now.
All over the map. Yeah, maybe you were right. That's possible. We have no way to tell it. Anyway, what am I seeing from this game? I'm seeing a game where, talent-wise, I think Ed Oliver has a chance to absolutely destroy this. If you can somehow, whether it's through double teams or Matt Hennessy showing why they think he's the best center prospect since Kyle Friend in this program, if you can have this type of performance where you're able to limit what Ed Oliver can do, Houston's offense hasn't looked absurd this year. Like, it's not like USF where they put up 30 straight points for however many games. They put up 17 points against... was it 17 against Texas Tech last week?
I think it was 24.
24. They lost 27-24.
Who am I thinking of? 17 points. The Downingtown West Whippets. No. They put up 19 points against Arizona is what I was thinking of. 38 points against Rice, but Rice, the Conference USA team, 24 points. They haven't looked absurd. I by no means think Temple's going to win this game. If you want any chance of getting your offense back on track, though, I think it starts and ends with Ed Oliver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this is Houston has a good defensive front. They obviously have Ed Oliver, who had, I think, had 23 tackles for a loss last season, which was second in the country as a true freshman. Mm-hmm. So he's a dynamic playmaker and could really cause some problems for Temple, especially for a team that hasn't been able to find really any success running the ball. But they do. Houston's given up some yards on the ground. I mean, I think they give up 160 yards per game rushing. So this could be. I know we said it last week. But this could be an opportunity for them to maybe get the run game going. Some teams have had some success running the ball against them. So I think this is, although Ed Oliver's a disruptive player, I think this is a game where Temple could get back on track here a little bit. I don't think they're going to win particularly, but I think this is an opportunity for them to get back on track. I think they're going to come out and play pretty well. And as Kyle said earlier, I feel pretty good about the way the defense played against USF considering, I mean, they gave up over 300 yards rushing, obviously 43 points. but they scored the team's only touchdown with that Jacob Martin fumble recovery. I thought they held USF in check, considering the fact that they were handed some really awful field position pretty much the entire night. So I thought the defense maybe played their best game of the season, considering everything, considering the field position and all that last week. So I think the defense is kind of going to have a good week. I think they looked pretty good against USF, considering that they gave up 43 points. So I feel, we talked about trending positive. I'm trending a little bit positive this week, even though I don't think they're going to win. I think they're going to come out and play pretty well.
You know who else? You know what else this game marks? The return of who? Who's Houston's defensive coordinator?
Oh, God, D'Onofrio.
Oh, right. D'Onofrio. I didn't even think about that.
I'm changing. I'm trending positive.
Al Golden's best friend, Mark D'Onofrio, former Temple defensive coordinator, who absolutely had the chance to replace Golden, and then Golden convinced him to go to Miami. Otherwise, the Steve Adazio era never would have happened.
Did D'Onofrio have kept Rule?
I would be surprised if he didn't. Yeah. I think so.
So
he's Houston's defensive coordinator.
Temple's going to put up a lot of yards, but still somehow get like 17 points.
That was his tenure here as defensive. Now, I will say this. Early on, unless I'm not remembering this correctly, he was a little bit more aggressive. And then there were just odd things like, God rest his soul, Adrian Robinson, the one season they just turned him loose as the defensive end. And then the following year, it's like, let's try to develop him more as a linebacker.
They thought they were doing him a solid. Like, hey,
preparing him for the league.
Yeah.
And they were like dropping him back more into coverage. And I was like, no. And then when Adazio came in, he's like, yeah, we're going to let our playmakers make plays. If this guy's good at rushing the passer. That, I think, was one of the criticisms of Mark, was that he kind of maybe got into his head a little bit too much, and his defense became more of a bend but don't break unit, which I don't know that anybody really likes. So I'll be interested to see how his defense looks. And again, I mean, he's got one of the best defensive tackles in America, so he's back. He's a big part of Temple football history, the modern history of it. Again, he absolutely was offered the job, and I think the administration at Temple thought he was going to take the job
because they had just given him a raise, right?
Yeah, he had just gotten a promotion to, like, I forget whatever it was, like associate head coach, and he went down to Miami with Al, where he became everybody's favorite whipping boy down there because he really, really got crushed by that fan base because they just did not play good defensive football down there. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of defensive identity Houston has. So you guys have said you're trending positive.
I'm not actually. The D'Onofrio thing is just making
prediction time. What's going on?
Go ahead, Matt.
I predicted on the Houston website, I said 24-17 Houston, so I'll stick with that.
I'll say 27-10 Houston. I don't think the offense gets it going. That being said, I was optimistic going to last week and they got stopped. So.
Maybe I should say 24-16 because that's 24-16, I'll say.
I don't know where it's coming from. I think Temple bounces back and I think they win this game.
I
have them winning this game 20-17 on a late Aaron Bumeri field goal. I think that, as cliche as it sounds, teams lose a lot from the teams learn a lot from a loss. I still think there's enough talent on this team where at least for 1 week they can pull it together and have one of those holy crap moments where, like, what the hell happened down in Tampa? That was bad. We should not be this bad. Should they be leading the conference right now? Are they as good as USF? Right. No. But something tells me they bounce back. Hennessy plays well. The guards play well. They keep Oliver in check. Logan starts, rediscovers something. Armstead pops a couple of runs. We've seen him pop a couple of runs. Mm-hmm. I just have a feeling they're going to bounce back and win a close game Saturday. I got Temple winning 20-17.
If they win this game, then this season has a relatively bright outlook. You're about to enter the soft part of the schedule.
The soft underbelly?
The soft underbelly of the schedule. If you somehow win this, you squeak one out, then okay, all of a sudden you played your worst game of the season, but you played it in a game you thought you were already going to lose, so it didn't change anything. You bounce back against a good opponent. Then you go at East Carolina, who's trash. UConn's UConn.
It's trash.
Army's not looking great this year, even if it is that Army. If you could end up winning four in a row, you're 6-2, then I think every single Temple fan would have signed off at 6-2 going into the season.
Yeah.
Or they lose this game and then they go on a losing streak and they go 3-9.
It's not a fun week on social media and message boards. All right. It's time for the sometimes serious, sometimes silly mailbag. Questions coming in from Twitter, from the message boards. We appreciate all the questions. First one comes from Getsky at Real Getsky. best spots to eat at on campus. Also, I'll be coming for the autograph Saturday. Very flattered. Getsky loves the meetup. He loves the, is it Zagat or Zagat?
Look, I'm from Georgia, and I don't know how to pronounce words like Zagat.
I'm a southern man. I'm from the south. I don't know what a toilet is, so I just went right here.
Hey, Jeff Collins did not come out with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, none of that this week.
Conference. He dropped Matt's name at one point.
He starts thanking the reporters when he loses by 36 points.
Mark Narducci, a little snippy. He's like, all right, enough of that.
they chimed back in with it. I was like, Narducci made a comment. Someone was like, oh, yeah, like I read his Zelgate. He's like, oh, I'm not sure about that. And they did it again. I was like, let's get back to the questions.
Mark. Yeah, it's like, easy, Mark. Let's just have some fun here. So yeah, Getsky likes the meetup questions. Best spots to eat out on campus. Also, be coming for the autograph Saturday. Best spots to eat out on campus.
Well, I feel like the food selection is so much different now than when I went here. Mm-hmm. And now I'm on my soup diet kick again, so I walk by things and it all looks great. But so I'll defer to the people that are actually on campus. You want health science stuff, come see me. Ted and Betsy's is awful. Now Tony, I call it Tony Slows. Tony Express is good.
Tony Slows.
Because he's very slow. You got to call him beforehand. I have his number in my cell phone. So I call his flip phone and say, Tony, I want the Tony Special. He goes, oh, okay.
I like this Vietnamese place. I think it's called Thai's down by Richie's. That's one of my go tos.
Yeah,
I also go to Chipotle a lot. Those are like my two main spots that I go to.
Like the Vietnamese place, like Orient Express, the Chinese place, which is two down. It's honestly, I think it's some of the best Chinese food in the city. I think the guy's so underrated. Stuff's very good. I like the Mexican Post, only of course walk. Although somebody told me that it's closing soon, which stinks. Yeah.
How's Blaze?
Blaze is solid. It's a chain pizza place. It's okay.
Not bad.
Are you peeling off the bandage on your flu shot? Never seen somebody. Yeah. Kyle just removed a Band-Aid during the podcast.
It was irritating me. Every time I moved, it kept going. There was some blood.
Throw that in the trash.
No, I'm going to eat it. Yeah, I'm going to throw it in the trash. What's wrong with you?
I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, those would be my recommendations.
Also, yeah, come see me for my John Hancock.
Yeah.
I'll have a signing booth.
Yeah, Getsky, just, God, if you're really serious about these autographs, well, I don't know.
Find for a small fee, I could get you.
Find us on Lot K.
Or the Pete Rose of Al Scoopy. That's how you charge him.
Again, I did. You've been recognized, at a party? You're the Matt vendor?
Yeah.
He's the Zach Greinke of this. You hear about this? About Greinke wouldn't sign autographs?
Yeah.
You're that guy.
I'll say this. I got a kick out of this. Walking up to the game, the UMass game, I didn't get the guy's name. I'm walking past with Evan Easterling from Temple News, and I was wearing my press credential. Guy says, hey, I recognize you now. I'm listening to the podcast. Good work. Is that weird? I recognize you. I was like, oh, thanks. And he kept walking.
Whoever's out there, we appreciate it.
We appreciate it. Listening. Yeah. Thanks for making me feel appreciated for about 2.7 seconds. Appreciate that.
I do like this next question.
Yeah. Next question. Temple out at Philly. Bully, your take on this NCAA situation.
Love it. I hope we see every Titan go down. I hope Quinnipiac is the best school remaining. Yeah. Everybody's known about this for 15 years, and whenever you would bring it 15. Up on the message boards or over a bar or just talking to somebody, they got that kid because they were playing, it always just came across as sour grapes.
Or, yeah, come on, man. That stuff's always exaggerated.
I can give you 15 examples of known kids in the tri-state area taking money to go to schools that they otherwise wouldn't have gone to. Hope it all comes crashing down.
South Carolina's on the list.
Burn That's the organization recent. From the ground. Yeah, and now you're going to get these...
Smell what we're cooking when we say South Carolina
you're
and Temple
get
recruiting?
Schools and coaches that might get in trouble for players that aren't even there anymore. And maybe they came back up north. Yeah. Don't know what's going on.
Huh. Yeah, it's...
Who
this
could
is
you be talking about?
Couldn't know.
This is long overdue. The NCAA just had no control over this. It got way out... It's been way out of hand. The AAU scene
Patino's been
ridiculous.
Scummy for 30 years. Finally, guys, come up. It's I will shed no tears over him.
Yeah, I hope Rick Pitino actually has to spend some days in jail. But I don't. We'll see about that.
He's been the pillar of ethics on and off the court.
He taught us that mozzarella sauce has had multiple purposes.
That's what I was referencing. I wasn't going to put it in so much detail, but I mean, this is going to be really, really interesting because. I think Seth, this is my personal opinion, I think Seth Davis has had some really good takes on. He said, if you're engaging in Schadenfreude, don't get too excited about it because your school could be next.
This is the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, there's so much good coverage out there about it right now. I would encourage you to read, like Mike Jensen had a pretty good piece on it. He said essentially the same thing. Like if you root for a program that is engaged in any sort of big time basketball. That's essentially like they've been cheating. Like, you know, yeah. I'll be interested to see what happens with Duke. I mean, like, they kind of got off scot free. You know, if you remember the Myron Piggy situation back in the early 2000s with Corey Maggette, that comes out after he had gone to the NBA. Also, one of the greatest student section pranks of all time. I don't know if you ever heard about this. I'm pretty sure I'm getting this right. So Myron Piggy is a guy that people are going to now. He'd spent some time in jail. Street agent. He went, rather than giving the feds some names of people who were participating in some of this stuff, he just adhered to street code.
He's a soldier.
And didn't snitch. Goes to jail. And now people are talking to him and saying, like, yeah, I didn't snitch. And now a lot of people think that people are gonna start talking. So Myron Piggy was the guy that got Corey Maggette some favors. Corey Maggette goes to Duke and then eventually goes to the NBA. So there were whispers of this. I think there were reports out about it when I don't know if this was when Corey Maggette was at Duke or after he had left. So the student section at Maryland reaches out to some of the student section, whatever, I guess the Cameron Crazies or whatever like that. The joke was they got student section at Maryland reaches out to the student section at Duke and says, hey, if you want a good prank, I think one guy said something like, hey, I go to Maryland, but I grew up a Duke fan. Here's a good joke you could play on us. Forget the name of the player, tall white dude. Oh, God, what was his name? I forget the player's name. He said, if you want a good joke, This kid on Maryland, his name is his girlfriend is her name's Myra, and her pet name for him is Piggy. So if you chant Myra and Piggy, it'll really get in his head. And the Duke students were like, yeah, that's great, that's awesome. They're like, yeah, we got some stuff. And then during that game, they start chanting Myra and Piggy, and it sounded like Myra and Piggy, and they're like indicting themselves, mentioning the street agent who was connected to Corey Maggette, and then after a while, they're like, and people at Barrow are like, we got you. Yeah,
that's fine.
Slight digression here, but yeah, this is going to be interesting. I still... Like, I mean, this is going to have far-reaching effects on, like, now the Nike grassroots guys. Yeah. I mean, computers are getting... I think, to me, and I still don't know if the NCAA is going to get it right. Life will go on in some way, shape, or form, but I really took the FBI to come in on this because there's been this culture of, like, yeah, it goes on. What do you want us to tell you? Like, people don't snitch.
You came to me, Kyle, and you said, Kyle, I want you to fix NCAA recruiting. I blow up the AAU circuit tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's full of slimy people. It's full of people getting their beak wet. Hey, I hope a lot of them are brought out from underneath their rocks.
Yeah, I agree. All right, next question comes from Christian Evans on Twitter. With Jagger out potentially, could we see Tyleek get any carries if he is healthy?
I think you might see both of them on crutches on the sideline this weekend,
if anything. I saw Jagger on crutches on campus. Don't know if he's definitely out. But, I mean, I think if it's Armstead, it's David Hood. We haven't heard anything about Tyleek being
I still don't think he's healthy.
Yeah. So then I think your third back in that situation is maybe like it's an Isaiah Wright or just handoffs to Sharga.
And Johnny Forrest, too, was special teams player of the week.
He had
scout team player of the week.
He's a three-star walk-on.
Yeah.
Johnny Forrest had some actual offers coming out of New Rochelle, I think, up in New York. Mm-hmm. And instead, he walked on Temple. So maybe
would that be my name if I became like a park ranger? Maybe. Johnny Forrest.
Oh, I thought you were saying
that's a good name. I like it.
Yeah, it sounds like something. I kind of like that. Johnny Forrest. Yo, Johnny Forrest, what's up? What do you think of them trees
over
there?
Sounds like a condescending South Philly thing. Like
just Johnny Chang's. Yeah. I missed that restaurant. Johnny Chang's. Next question. Anyway, Mark Jamil on Twitter. What is happening on D, especially because it was considered Colin strength? Johnson was a poor choice as defensive coordinator given his horrid D at Purdue.
It wasn't Tavor Johnson's defense at Purdue. He was the defensive backs coach, and they were playing with like MAC level talent against the Big Ten.
Yeah. I don't know if I could sum it up.
I think defense is improving. I think it played better last week, like we've already talked about. The numbers are skewed because you gave him the ball on the 35-yard line over and over and over again. And yeah, USF, which is one of the best offices in the nation, is going to put up points against
him. We have to cut you loose because you got to go to a class, right?
Yeah, I got to go to class. But after
real life intercedes here at the Scoop. My apologies to Chris Vito, who's a sports writer, who is also your professor. Tom, I said thank you.
Yeah, I do want to say though, I think the last thing anybody should be complaining about is the defense after last week. I think the offense is the major concern of the defense. considering the field position and the position that they were dealt. I thought they played pretty well, and
it was kind of an all or nothing proposition. They either made some great plays or they would just get completely gashed up the middle. But they were on the field so much that Quentin Flowers, we've seen, can't throw a damn. He's a terrible quarterback. He's a terrible throwing quarterback, but he can run. They held him to really bad numbers throwing the ball, but he can run. They have running backs. It was either to give up a big play or stop them. And yeah, considering the position they were put in, 6 turnovers. Yeah, Matt, we'll see you Saturday. Yep. Matt runs off to class.
Education, the total package. First. He is a student.
He's a student journalist.
Student before he's a journalist.
See you, buddy. All right, next question comes from Tannhauser on the message boards. I almost don't want to know, but you can you ask him, I guess that means Collins, about the stupid tomato cans on top of the trainer's locker? Tannhauser, I got nothing for you.
Bet you it's something, if you zoomed in, it's like not a tomato can, it's like a swag can.
Yeah, no idea.
You got to bring the juice. I love tomato juice.
Yeah, I like tomato juice.
Really?
Yeah, I drink it on, that's my go-to drink on a plane.
Really?
Yeah.
Mine is enough whiskey to kill a horse.
Yeah.
I just fall asleep.
Last time you and I were on a plane together, I was just trying to just be cautious about not drinking anything.
I was drinking whiskeys and eating peanut M&Ms. Yeah. Great day.
I was running to the bathroom 6 times.
That was the last time we were on a plane together. Yeah, where else would we be on a plane together?
I don't know. All those trips to Fiji together we forgot about.
All the years you know, mate.
Yeah. Let's save Pat's question for the end.
Sure.
Hippo Ears, longtime Al Scoop reader and message board poster. 3-part question. Number one, what's the knowledgeable opinion on the offensive coordinator's play calling?
It's identityless right now.
Yeah.
So the people asking for somebody to be fired were the same people asking Phil Snow to get fired for 4 games.
Yeah.
And give him some time. He has had success. I think he's just at... It's not like... I don't get the feeling that he's overwhelmed. I get the feeling that he's dealing with a situation where he's bringing the new quarterback, and he's also dealing with, I want to implement this one system, but I have players for another system. I'm trying to do them a solid by running both systems. I think 3 years from now, this, hey, we're trying to be both things going to go away, and they're going to end up just running an actual spread offense.
Mm-hmm.
And whether or not that's successful, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's where it's going. I think until then, they're just doing this makeshift offense that has raised some questions.
Yeah, and I think people, you hear stuff, people, I mean, look, people like, you know, like Hippo Ears, people, I mean, can run into former players in Lot K, and former players will chime in, they'll have their opinions. You don't necessarily have to be a reporter to hear what people think. If you're talking about the knowledgeable opinion, yeah, I mean, the knowledgeable opinion, you do hear from other people and saying, yeah, they, again, like you said, it needs an identity.
It's what Matt Rhule tried doing when he first came here, when he tried to bring the spread. The difference is,
he wanted to bring in Nick Rolovich. Remember, he had him hired by a verbal agreement. And then
he had him for like 10 days, and then he went back to Nevada. Yeah. So they would have run the pistol over and over again.
Yep.
The difference is, after it failed the first year, even though they put up numbers their first year, but they only won 2 games. After it failed, quote-unquote, failed the first year, Rhule said, I just remembered, like, or maybe it was after the second year when they couldn't get the offense going. I just remember the way that we won games here was with a hard nose, and then went back to that. Difference is going to be, if this continues to fail, does Jeff Collins stick with it and say, okay, eventually this is going to work, Dave Patton sticks with it, or do they follow the blueprint that Rhule did and they go back to the roots? Because the fact of the matter is, the team roster right now is not shaped for the spread.
Question number two. Seems to me that until the offensive line issues are resolved, won't matter a lot who the quarterback is, or the breakdowns in the offensive line's performance capable of being fixed, or is it a matter of inadequate talent, inadequate coaching, or what? Arthur's all the million-dollar questions. I would agree with this point. Until the offensive line issues are fixed, won't matter who the quarterback is.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think I tweeted, oh, Frank Neuthal or Todd Taylor's in at quarterback doesn't change the fact that the offensive line was a sieve at that point. Like,
yeah. Are the breakdowns capable of being fixed? Yeah, sure they are. I think anything's capable of being fixable. I still think you will see Matt Hennessy grow. Your guards are essentially the same.
Javon Fair coming back would help.
Yeah. And the only thing that I'm a little surprised with out of the gate is that Cole Boozer played well enough to start at right tackle. And, I mean, Jalen can kind of be like a swing guy for you. They've talked about moving him inside at guard. But, yeah, I think they're capable of being fixed. I don't know if it's – is it a matter of inadequate talent, inadequate coaching, or what? I mean, I think Chris Wiesehand knows how to coach offensive linemen, but he's got to figure – something out now, because again, whether they were running out of the eye, whether they're running out of shotgun, these guys are getting moved off the ball. Again, I would never minimize the loss of Deion Dawkins. He's very good.
It started last week.
Yeah, but it's not like you lost every bone on your offensive line. And I still think at the end of the day, Hennessy will be an upgrade over Brendan McGowan, but I do think those issues can be fixed. I think if Hennessy continues to progress, that will obviously be a huge thing for you. Number three, many believe that Russo should be playing despite what the coaching staff thinks. In your opinion, does he deserve to play? No, I don't. I've got nothing, as you said, I've got nothing against Anthony Russo. You have nothing against Anthony Russo. I'm not saying the coaches are infallible. They're not perfect. No coach is perfect. But ask yourself this question. These guys, their livelihood depends on winning games. Do you think they would be stupid enough to not play this guy if he was able to help them? The answer is no.
If he was lighting up in practice, he would be in the conversation.
Yeah, I don't know.
For all
again,
we know, something clicks with Anthony Russo this week, and 3 weeks from now, he's starting quarterback against UConn.
Yeah, it would be a great story.
Until then, I have heard nothing. I have seen nothing to think that's going to be the case. But he's a young kid. Wish him the best.
Yeah.
Hope that he turns it around.
Yeah. Final question comes from the Pistol, Pat Egan. Compare the first four games of Collins.
Three questions in here.
Yeah. Compare the first four games of Collins to the first four of Rule. Good and bad, and then we'll get to his next question.
So, August 31st, 2013, Temple opens at Notre Dame, loses 28-6. Jim Cooper misses a lot of kicks.
Mm-hmm.
September 2nd, 2017, Temple opens at Notre Dame, gives up 49 points, their most points in 12 years, and loses 49-16. I would say Matt Rhule made a better debut than...
They did. They were more competitive with less talent.
Yeah. Next week, Matt Rhule's 0-1 team goes to Houston, which we referenced earlier. Houston comes to them, which we referenced. They lead 13-9 at halftime. They lose 22-13 to Houston. Jeff Collins squeaks out a win against cross-area region. Delaware Valley, Villanova, 16-13.
Up Girard Avenue, down to Lancaster Avenue, all the same thing. Route 30 is what it is.
16-13.
Yeah. Actually, no. Well, they didn't play the game on Nova's campus. That's neither here nor there.
Yeah, I'm saying, do you give more credit to Jeff Collins beating an FCS program or Matt Rhule losing a kind of close game to a conference foe?
You got to give the nod there to Jeff.
Yeah, you squeaked out one.
Yeah.
Next week, Jeff Collins beats UMass 29-21. Temple loses to Fordham on the last second drive.
Hey, you give the edge to Jeff there.
That was the first probably not the last time I saw on Twitter fire Matt Rhule.
You
got to give to Jeff Collins. Jeff Collins up 2-1. Week four, you think, oh man, it's embarrassing. Jeff Collins gets destroyed at South Florida. However, this Frankenstein of a game, Temple loses at Idaho in a gym auditorium,
26-24. Yeah.
And that was a surge back to lose 26-24. Yeah. They had to make a comeback.
I give the edge to Matt here only because it was a weird road game. Look, it's a bad look for both coaches and in those respective games and times. They just got so heavily dismantled. Again, it's worse on Jeff's end because he's working with more talent. Matt did not have as much talent. Again, did they surge back to make it respectable? Yeah, that was the final tipping point for Connor, right? And it was after that. Then that was really what started to sway the pendulum toward
him and
thinking
Juice
about
played a little bit the next week against. Oh, yeah, no, that would have been it. So they both play against Fordham. Then they go and they lose at Idaho. Louisville, Connor started, got injured or got pulled after the first
drive.
And
that's when PJ
took over and PJ never let off.
Yeah, again, not a great game then. Not a great game last Thursday. To me, last Thursday was worse because they got completely dismantled. It was just such a point of desperation. Let's try Logan. Let's try Frank. Let's try Logan again. Let's try Toddy. He can't even get a pass off. It was bad.
Yeah. Remember in The Good Son, she's holding Coley Culkin and Elijah Wood over the cliff, and she only has the strength to pull up one.
Oh, yeah.
I'm letting both drop. Both splatter.
That's good knowledge.
I never want
to
remember either of those games again.
Wow.
We're on to Houston.
Yeah. Okay. And, as Pat writes in all caps here, you can go to the Sizzler Salad Bar with one person. Who do you choose and why? Your choices are Pope Benedict XVI, John Wayne Bobbitt, or Sean Spicer. And there's a third question here. We'll get to that. Let's contemplate question number two. Go to the Sizzler Salad Bar with one person, Pope Benedict XVI, John Wayne Bobbitt, or Sean Spicer. I know who I'm going with. And it's not even close.
Who are you going with?
I'm going with John Wayne Bobbitt.
Why?
Pope Benedict XVI.
A little Nazi-ish.
Well, you know what? I did a little research on this today. apparently his father, you maybe double check this, not that I should be treating you like you're my producer or something like that. From what I read today, I always heard, okay, he had ties to the Nazi party. Yes, Hitler Pope Benedict, he was part of the Hitler Youth, but like he had to be part of the Hitler Youth. He had to be part of the Hitler Youth, and apparently his father was outspoken against the Nazi party. So kudos to him for that.
He was so outspoken against the Nazis, he constantly got demoted and the family got harassed.
Yeah. So
he was conscripted into the Hitler Youth. I mean, yeah, he didn't have a choice.
Yeah, he didn't have a choice. Benedict XVI was generally seen as like an uber-conservative pope. I think the current pope, the Catholic Church, is a lot more progressive, a lot more understanding, a lot more practical. So I give him credit for that. So Pope Benedict XVI would not be my choice. Sean Spicer, I don't. You know, there are probably hundreds of people who have unfollowed me on Facebook and Twitter just because of me being outspoken against Donald Trump, but I'm just so fed up with it. I get the fact that you wanted to crack a joke during the Emmys. I don't think we should be normalizing the behavior of a guy who, even if he was under a ton of pressure, just lied to the American people. So I wouldn't want to hang out with Spicy. John Wayne Bobbitt, dude, you're back. Your penis was cut off. How did you do it? I mean, how do you live through something like
that? Didn't she do porn? Maybe. I feel like she did later on or something.
This was like a big story when we were growing up.
I'll say I agree with Spicy. I understand he's trying to do his little individual PR tour where he makes himself more likable. Hmm. I have no interest in it. John Wayne Bobbitt, I have almost PTSD thinking of you and him at Sizzler together. You both have trouble going to the bathroom, I'm sure. They reattached it. There's no way that thing's working the same way. When it gets cold, it probably like goes in a spiral. It probably looks like a pig's tail. And just... But I think this is easy. You have the opportunity to, regardless of whether or not you think he has a questionable past, which I don't think he does, have dinner at a Sizzler salad bar with a pope. The only pope to give up the papacy in how long?
First of all, having dinner with a pope, I'm not wasting the venue. Like, yeah, you want to have dinner, take me to the Vatican.
What, as if he's going to be like, oh, man, he took me to the Capitol Grill. This John guy is doing so well.
He can barely talk. He'd be so boring. He'd be boring.
What are you talking about? You're taking selfies with him. You're taking Snapchats of you and the pope. Hey, maybe he still has the hat. Does he get to wear the hat?
No, first of all, we're at a Sizzler salad bar.
Yeah, so?
Food's not going to be great.
I don't care.
So the conversation, if the food's not going to be great, the conversation's got to be good, right? No. You're going to get more of a great conversation.
He starts spilling secrets about Vatican City, all this stuff. Oh, man, you take a left here, you open it up. That's where I used to smoke weed in the corner. Like, you have no idea.
You're not getting that out of him.
You're not getting that out of him. I, being a trained journalist, am getting that out of him.
Yeah, sure
you are. And I'm wearing a wire the whole time. I'm just live broadcasting.
You're wearing a wire?
Not right now, but...
No, yeah. Not now. I know you're not wearing one right now. You're not a good journalist. Where's this Sizzler? Is it in Pennsylvania?
Two-party
state.
I didn't say I have ethics. Who is my ethics teacher here? My ethics professor?
I don't know. I'm taking John Wayne ethics. Bobbitt. Taking John Wayne Bobbitt. I think, like, if you look up some stuff on John Wayne Bobbitt... And
pretty sure she did porn.
No, I'm not concerned about Lorena. Look up John, and he had an interesting conversation with his parents concerning how he recovered. It's very funny.
He still sends her Valentine's Day cards and flowers every year.
Yeah. Didn't we...
Break away, man.
Did we... Am I getting deja vu, or did we talk about this in another... Did we talk about that part
in
another...
Every Wednesday, when you and I get together to play Euchre, and we talk about Jane Williams...
I swear to God, I feel like you and I have had this conversation about him sending the Valentine's cards to her. But I think, like, on this podcast we did.
Maybe.
I don't know.
We talk about a lot of things. A lot of topics.
Yeah, we do. I'd also like to know how much money both you and JDC, so I guess this is Pat sent this question to Kyle, have gotten from LA Gear to push Matt and Bender to sign with Temple. It was worth it just for the LA Gear reference.
I don't want to overshadow the fact that at one point Temple was sponsored by And1. The fact that Temple's apparel was And1 at one point just...
Well, And1 for a while was like a hot company.
Yeah.
Formed by a Penn grad, and I think he had some sort of relationship with Dunf, right?
Isn't
AM1 kind of like peaked and then just went away?
Doesn't West Towns coach?
Yeah, it's Seth had some sort of problem with AM1, right? He was one of the guys that. I feel like this happens in sports talk radio. Did this happen? Yeah, and someone gets on Google. Yeah, I think Seth Berger was involved with AM1, right?
Seth Berger was the guy, yeah. He was the Warren grad who launched the project with nationwide name recognition.
Yeah,
Seth Berger. And now he's a coach at West Town.
Yeah.
And his players can't stop smoking weed and they go to downtown east.
Yeah. a guy whose name rhymes with Samuel Mishmeshnu. Yeah.
Well, no, we didn't pay. We do things all natural here at the Al Scoop.
Yeah.
We recruited Matt. We just stayed with him, even though he was committed to a what we perceived as a lesser school. We stayed on him, and we showed him, come to the big time.
Yeah. Yeah, so...
We can get you to the pros.
The FBI is not going to be raiding our computers.
Not for that, at least.
I knew that joke was coming from a mile away. All right, well, thanks for tuning in this week. We'll be back next week, of course, wrap up conversation about the Houston game. I'll be talking basketball pretty soon, at some point.
First week of practice in like eight days.
A lot to talk about in the coming weeks with the new recruits, the four new guys on campus, Josh Brown being back. We'll see what additional carnage has unfolded with this whole NCAA investigation.
In 2 weeks, we might have a very interesting podcast.
Yeah.
After the Board of Trustees meeting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, stay tuned for that after October 10th. All right, thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you guys next week.
I saw on Twitter, fire Matt Rhule.
Yeah.
You got to give it to Jeff Collins. Jeff Collins up 2-1. Week 4, you think, oh, man, it's embarrassing. Jeff Collins gets destroyed at South Florida. However... This Frankenstein of a game. Temple loses at Idaho in a gym auditorium,
26-24. Yeah,
and that was a surge back to lose 26-24. Yeah. They had to make a comeback.
I give the edge to Matt here only because it was a weird road game. Look, it's a bad look for both coaches in those respective games and times. They just got so heavily dismantled again. It's worse on Jeff's end because he's working with more talent. Matt did not have as much talent. Again, did they surge back to make it respectable? Yeah, that was the final tipping point for Connor, right? And it was after that, then that was really what started to sway the pendulum toward
him
them,
and
thinking
Juice
about,
played a little bit the next week against... Oh, yeah, no, that would have been it. So they both played against Fordham. Then they go and they lose at Idaho. Louisville, Connor started, got injured or got pulled after the first
drive. And
that's
when PJ
took over and PJ never let off.
Yeah, again, not a great game then, not a great game last Thursday. To me, last Thursday was worse because they got completely dismantled. It was just such a point of desperation. Let's try Logan. Let's try Frank. Let's try Logan again. Let's try Toddy. He can't even get a pass off. It was bad.
Yeah. Remember in The Good Son, she's holding Coley Culkin and Elijah Wood over the cliff, and she only has the strength to pull up one?
Oh, yeah.
I'm letting both drop. Both splatter.
That's good knowledge.
I never
want
to remember either of those games again.
Wow.
We're on to Houston.
Yeah. Okay. And, as Pat writes in all caps here, you can go to the Sizzler Salad Bar with one person. Who do you choose and why? Your choices are Pope Benedict XVI, John Wayne Bobbitt, or Sean Spicer. And there's a third question here. We'll get to that. Let's contemplate question number two. Go to the Sizzler Salad Bar with one person, Pope Benedict XVI, John Wayne Bobbitt, or Sean Spicer. I know who I'm going with. And it's not even close.
Who are you going with?
I'm going with John Wayne Bobbitt.
Why?
Pope Benedict XVI.
A little Nazi-ish.
Well, you know what? I did a little research on this today. Apparently his father... You maybe double check this. Not that I should be treating you like you're my producer or something like that. From what I read today, I always heard, okay, he had ties to the Nazi Party. Yes,
Hitler
Pope Benedict, he was part of the Hitler Youth, but like he had to be part of the Hitler Youth. He had to be part of the Hitler Youth, and apparently his father was outspoken against the Nazi Party. So kudos to him for that.
He was so outspoken against the Nazis, he constantly got demoted and the family got harassed.
Yeah. So
he was conscripted into the Hitler Youth. I mean, yeah, he didn't have a choice.
Yeah, he didn't have a choice. Benedict XVI was generally seen as like an uber-conservative pope. I think the current pope, the Catholic Church, is a lot more progressive, a lot more understanding, a lot more practical, so I give him credit for that. So Pope Benedict XVI would not be my choice. Sean Spicer, I don't... You know, there are probably hundreds of people who have unfollowed me on Facebook and Twitter just because of me being outspoken against Donald Trump, but I'm just so fed up with it. I get the fact that you wanted to crack a joke during the Emmys. I don't think we should be normalizing the behavior of a guy who, even if he was under a ton of pressure, just lied to the American people. So I wouldn't want to hang out with Spicy. John Wayne Bobbitt, dude, you're back. Your penis was cut off. How did you do it? I mean, how do you live through something like
Didn't
that?
Didn't she do porn? Maybe. I feel like she did later on or something.
This was like a big story when we were growing up.
I'll say I agree with Spicy. I understand he's trying to do his little individual PR tour where he makes himself more likable. Hmm. I have no interest in it. John Wayne Bobbitt, I have almost PTSD thinking of you and him at Sizzler together. You both have trouble going to the bathroom, I'm sure. They reattached it. There's no way that thing's working the same way. When it gets cold, it probably like goes in a spiral. It probably looks like a pig's tail. And just, but I think this is easy. You have the opportunity to, regardless of whether or not you think he has a questionable past, which I don't think he does, have dinner at a Sizzler salad bar with a pope. The only pope to give up the papacy in how long?
First of all, from having dinner with a pope, I'm not wasting the venue. Like, yeah, you want to have dinner, take me to the Vatican.
What, as if he's going to be like, oh, man, he took me to the Capitol Grill. This John guy is doing so well.
He can barely talk. He'd be so boring. He'd be boring.
What are you talking about? You're taking selfies with you? You're taking Snapchats of you and the pope? Hey, maybe he still has the hat. Does he get to wear the hat?
No, first of all, we're at a Sizzler salad bar.
Yeah, so?
Food's not going to be great.
I don't care.
So the conversation, if the food's not going to be great, the conversation's got to be good, right? No. You're going to get more of a great conversation.
He starts spilling secrets about Vatican City, all this stuff. Oh, man, you take a left here, you open it up. That's where I used to smoke weed in the corner. Like, you have no idea.
You're not getting that out of him.
You're not getting that out of him. I, being a trained journalist, am getting that out of him.
Yeah, sure
you are. And I'm wearing a wire the whole time. I'm just live broadcasting.
You're wearing a wire?
Not right now, but...
No, yeah. Not now. I know you're not wearing one right now. You're not a good journalist. Where's this Sizzler? Is it in Pennsylvania?
Two-party
state.
I didn't say I have ethics. Who is my ethics teacher here? My ethics professor?
I don't know. I'm taking John Wayne Bobbitt. Taking John Wayne Bobbitt. I think, like, if you look up some stuff on John Wayne Bobbitt...
Pretty sure she did porn.
No, I'm not concerned about Lorena. Look up John, and he had an interesting conversation with his parents concerning how he recovered. It's very funny.
He still sends her Valentine's Day cards and flowers every year.
Yeah.
Breakaway, man.
Am I getting deja vu, or did we talk about this in another... Did we talk about that part
Every
in another,
Wednesday when you and I get together play
Euchre
and we talk about Janeway and...
Swear to God, I feel like you and I have had this conversation about him sending the Valentine's cards to her. But I think, like, on this podcast we did.
Maybe.
I don't know.
We talk about a lot of things. A lot of topics.
Yeah, we do. I'd also like to know how much money both you and JDC, so I guess this is Pat sent this question to Kyle, have gotten from LA Gear to push Matt and Bender to sign with Temple. It was worth it just for the LA Gear reference.
I don't want to overshadow the fact that at one point Temple was sponsored by And1. The fact that Temple's apparel was And1 at one point just...
Well, And1 for a while was like a hot company.
Yeah.
Formed by a Penn grad, and I think he had some sort of relationship with Dunf, right?
Is it?
M1 kind of like peaked and then just went away.
Doesn't West Towns coach?
Yeah, it's Seth had some sort of problem with M1, right? He was one of the guys that... I feel like this happens in sports talk radio. Did this happen? Someone gets on Google. Yeah, I think Seth Berger was involved with M1, right?
Seth Berger was... The guy, yeah.
Yeah.
He was the Warren grad who launched the project with nationwide name recognition.
Yeah.
Yeah, Seth Berger. And now he's a coach at West Town.
Yeah.
And his players can't stop smoking weed and they go to downtown East.
Yeah. A guy whose name rhymes with Samuel Mishmeshnu.
Mishmeshnu.
Yeah. Well,
no, we didn't pay. We do things all natural here at the Owl Scoop.
Yeah.
We recruited Matt. We just stayed with him, even though he was committed to a what we perceived as a lesser school. We stayed on him, and we showed him, come to the big time.
Yeah. Yeah, so...
We can get you to the pros.
The FBI is not going to be raiding our computers.
Not for that, at least.
I knew that joke was coming from my whole way. All right, well, thanks for tuning in this week. We'll be back next week, of course, wrap up conversation about the Houston game. I'll be talking basketball pretty soon at some point.
First day of practice in like eight days.
A lot to talk about in the coming weeks with the new recruits, the four new guys on campus, Josh Brown being back. We'll see what additional carnage has unfolded with this whole NCAA investigation.
In 2 weeks, we might have a very interesting podcast.
Yeah.
After the Board of Trustees meeting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, stay tuned for that. October 10th. All right, thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you guys next week.